Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and earlier this week, President Obama unveiled a new plan to combat climate change and reduce human impact on the environment. On the other side of the globe, the Fulani people of West Africa are already feeling the effects of climate change on their lifestyle. Out of the 40 million nomads left in the world, more than half of them are Fulani. Journalist Anna Botkin spent a year journeying with a Fulani family, learning about their culture, religion, the threats to their way of life, and why they may be more susceptible than many others to be lured in by jihadi groups. She chronicles her travels in the new book, Walking with Abel, Journeys with the Nomads of the African Savannah. Anna, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you for having me.
What's a nomad in 2015? What does the word actually mean today?
Well, the nomad is somebody who follows cattle. In 2015 or 10,000 years ago, when the first nomads began to traverse the earth. And today's nomads are cattle herders of the Sahel or reindeer herders in Alaska. Maybe some shepherds in Anatolia are nomads. I spent a year working with, living with, and herding cattle, herding cows with nomadic Fulani cowboys in the Sahel.
What was that like for you? Where did you grow up? How different was that for you?
Well, I grew up in the global south, but I grew up in the Soviet Union, so my global south was very far north at the 60th parallel. When I tried to describe what it was like to grow up in snow to my hosts, they laughed at me. They couldn't believe that such a thing is possible. They said, "What do the cows eat?"
So with more than 20 million members, the Fulani, you tell us, are the largest remaining group of nomads in the world. What got you interested in traveling with the Fulani? What were you really looking for?
I'm interested in all of my work in exploring other ways of looking at the world, a different vantage point of experiencing our planet and experiencing life. And I thought, what is it like to experience life at 3 miles an hour with people who have been walking always? I mean, we're talking about a group that has been walking for a living for the last 10,000 years. So what is it like? What is the world like to them? And what is it like to be with them in these huge open spaces for which our bodies and our minds have evolved? What is it like to see the world with them and maybe through their eyes?
And so you write that you cooked over a manure fire and slept next to a goat during your migratory trip between summer and winter pastures. You went on this trip with the Fulani for the book. And listeners, do you have a question about the Fulani people? Do you want to know more about Anna Botkin's journey? Call us at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And I do want to relate this to some of the contemporary issues that we deal with in this country, because you do in the book link it to climate change and jihadi terrorism. Why would a nomad people like the Fulani be more susceptible to the effects of climate change than anyone else?
Because they have absolutely no social security structure to fall back on. Everything they have is their cattle, and their cattle is dependent on the presence of pasture. Now, with the crises, the droughts that are becoming systemic in sub-Saharan Africa, the pastures are dwindling, and so there's less grazing land for the cows, and so the cows are dying, and if the cows are dying, then the Fulani have nothing to eat. It's very simple. It's almost simplistic, and it's tragically simple.
It's the expansion of the desert, desertification.
Absolutely.
You write that jihadists are also another major challenge to the Fulanis. Is it that they're being recruited by the jihadis, or they're being attacked by the jihadis?
Both. Some Fulani join the jihad because they're very popular marabu, very popular religious leaders who encourage young Fulani men to take back grazing lands that they believe belong to them. And, of course, some Fulani have to reroute their journeys that have been finessed by millennia of traveling because of the jihad, because there is a war now where their pastures used to be.
So there's a relationship between climate change and the increase in jihadists in the region?
Yes, it is believed very widely that there is a very strong link between the loss of resource and religiously motivated wars, because, of course, all wars are territorial wars. And the access to an increasing amount of disempowered people, this is what any terrorist group feeds on.
212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. To talk to journalist Anna Bodkin, who's here with her new book, Walking with Abel, Journeys with the Nomads of the African Savannah. And Noor in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hey, hello, Brian. How are you today?
Good, thank you.
Okay, my question for your host is, okay, I'm from the Burani Nomad tribe, which is the northern part of Chad, southern of Libya. And we've been, like, in touch with the Fulani for so long now, for, like, it's been forever. We want to know, what is the origin of Fulani? Which part of Africa they really belong to?
Why would that matter, Noor? I'm just curious what you're trying to solve for yourself here.
Okay, because, like, I'm Burani, and then the northern part of Chad been our home for the past 2,000-3,000 years. Wherever you go, to any country in, like, sub-Saharan African country, you will always see Fulani. So I want to know, to which group of, like, or to which country they really belong, how their journey start, why they become the largest nomad tribe on, like, in all African country. Like, I really want to know, what are their origins and, like, which part of Africa they belong, and why, like, after, like, so, like, after 10,000 years, they're still the biggest nomad tribe in Africa.
Okay, you've drawn a big smile from our guest, by the way. So, Anna, what do you have to say to Noor?
Well, the origin of the Fulani people is also the origin of my people and Brian's people. It's believed to be Ethiopia. We all came from Ethiopia. Fulani do not belong specifically. There is no Fulani country. As you probably know, Fulani live across the Sahel in about 20 countries, and they're a minority in each of them. They don't have a state of their own, which makes sense for a nomadic people, that there would be no borders.
So they're stateless people. They're not registered with the government of any country in many cases, right?
Very often, because governments, being organizations that believe in control and borders, traditionally dislike people who are hard to control and borderless.
And that's, there's tension, as you tell it, between the Fulani nomads and the sedentary people of Mali in particular?
That's the old Cain and Abel tension, right? Cain was a farmer and Abel was a herder, and they didn't like each other, and they still don't.
Hence the title of your book, Walking with Abel.
Correct.
George in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, George.
Thank you very much. I just want to offer a comment with regards to the very first definition. You see, nomadic is not peculiar to Fulanis. Nomadics are the people who move from place to place. They never settle in any place. So you can use it for any situation. Not necessarily the meaning of nomadic is people follow cattle. And moreover, Fulanis are major tribes in West Africa. They are called different names in different countries. Fulanis are in Nigeria. They are major tribe in Nigeria in the military. They are major tribe in Ghana. They are major tribe in Mali. They are major tribe in Senegal. Fulanis are all over West Africa.
George, thank you very much. I don't think you disagree with anything that he said.
No, that's correct.
And you're right that in the case of the Fulani, history doesn't repeat itself. It parodies. What do you mean by that?
In the 19th century, a trilingual Fulani poet named Uthman Danvogio launched a jihad to bring Islam or purify Islam in West African heartlands. He came with fighters on camelback and horseback and delivered a jihad on the tips of spears to what today is Mali, among other places. And one of his disciples became a very prominent sheikh who created the Massina Empire, Fulani Empire, in today's central Mali. One of the things that that sheikh did, his name was Sekou Amadou, Sheikh Amadou, he destroyed or let fall into disrepair old mosques and old religious monuments that he believed to be too ostentatious and un-Islamic. Today's jihadis in Mali are doing the same thing, as most of our listeners probably know, destroying ancient monuments. And very recently, somebody had tried to blow up a very small and rather unpretentious mausoleum in Mali, and that mausoleum actually is the grave of Sekou Amadou.
Here is a Fulani caller from Manhattan. Mamadou, you're on WNYC. Hello, Mamadou.
Hello, hi. Thanks for calling me. I like the show. What your guest is saying concerning Fulani about being nomad, so That was a true, I would say, centuries ago. But nowadays, in my case or in my country, so Fulani are following less cows. So businesses are held by Fulani. So we're not doing that kind of job anymore. And if you see,
so you're saying, just to be clear for our listeners, Mamadou, you're saying Fulani aren't just following the cows, as you put it.
Yeah,
following the cattle from season to different places, doing other things as well.
Correct. So I will say we are even 5% following cows now, because, as I said, my grandfather was born in 1915, so he doesn't know anything about cow. He was a guy living in the city. He passed away in Dakar. My father himself doesn't know anything about cow. So I myself, I cannot get close to a cow, thinking that the cow can do harm to me.
Mm-hmm.
So when you come to do, job that Fulani people do today, businesses in West Africa, I would say 80% are held by Fulani. Fulanis have become traders. They have become business people. They have become entrepreneurs.
And now the line is breaking up, so I'm going to have to go. But Mamadou, thank you. Fulanis have become traders. Fulanis have become business people.
Yes, Chiabasane Mamadou, thank you for joining us. Absolutely. And moreover, demographic experts predict that within 100 years, all people on the planet will be settled and living in cities. The farther the planet changes, the more centered, the more metropolitan areas expand, the harder it is, of course, to maintain the kind of lifestyle, the traditional kind of lifestyle that, as Mamadou pointed out, most Fulani experienced 300 years ago and few continue to maintain today. When I brought this up to my hosts, they paused and they said, in cities, where will we keep our cows?
Mm. We have three more Fulani callers waiting on the line.
Bismillah.
We have time to take one more of them. And let's see. Who should we make it? Well, let's make it Ba in Manhattan.
Yeah.
Hi, you're on WNYC.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Brown. I'm very, very happy to have this segment. I'm Fulani. I'm from Guinea, West Africa. Over there, we have a majority tribe. We are 40% of the population. And since the 18th century, since 1760, we are no more nomad. We have our empire, the Fouta Djallon in Guinea. If you go to Senegal, you will find also the Fouta Toro. If you go to Mali, you will find the Massina Empire. That's we are no more nomad. We are exactly like all other peoples, and we live in a specific area. Mm-hmm. I think the lady, she lives with those we call Bororo, Pulo Burure. Bororo means Fulani from the bush.
Correct.
They live in the bush, the Bororo people. I lived with them in Niamey, in Birningaure, what we call W Park in Niger. I know them very well. I'm Fulani, I speak Fulani. So it's not more true that we are nomad, first of all.
Thank you, and I'm going to leave that there as the last thought. I could listen to him all day. But you chose to follow, for your book, those Fulani who are still
the Bororo
nomads.
Ladenke Fulani, yes.
Because you find that lifestyle so, what, rare in this world anymore. And threatened? Is this about trying to preserve the possibility of nomad life? The Fulani who were calling in seem to make it sound like, hey, we don't do that anymore. We're in the modern world now. You know, maybe they don't care that much if the nomadic lifestyle persists.
No, not really, Brian. It's more about experiencing the world in a different way than people in the global north are familiar with. So it's not really, it's not an attempt to exoticize a lifestyle that is vanishing. It's not an attempt to even immortalize in a way or stop time a little bit. It's just a way of experiencing the world from a different vantage point and describing what is it like to be constantly leaving? What is it like to be constantly arriving philosophically, psychologically? What is it like to be on the hoof all the time? And there, while most people are indeed settling, there still are a lot of people, about 40 million people in the world, who still are doing this one way or another.
We have nomads in New York too, you know, people who get kicked out of their apartments over and over again by gentrification and have to follow affordable housing from borough to borough to borough.
Exactly.
But that's another story. So we will leave it there. Anna Botkin will be at the community bookstore in Park Slope. If you want to meet her tonight and talk more about this and hear more about the Fulani people and her book, that's 143 7th Avenue tonight at 7, the community bookstore in Park Slope. The book is called Walking with Abel, Journeys with the Nomads of the African Savannah. So fascinating. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
And thanks to all our callers. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, the head of Citibike, Jay Walder. Stay with us.